Chapter 39. Winton. Wren was lost in Anders Wood. Well, not precisely lost. She just couldn't find her way back to Sergeant Rooks's shack. Never before had Rooks taken her so far into the forest. He had blindfolded her securely as he led her on an indirect route. Then he had made her turn around 6 times to lose her sense of direction while he slipped away. Even with his limp from his stiffening old wounds, Rooks crept stealthily. She needed to retrace their path, reading only the signs of the trail they had left. But Rooks had made her wade through streams 3 times and led her over rock ledges, and he would certainly have erased any obvious footprints. If she didn't return by morning, probably Rooks would come rescue her. Or maybe not. After all, since Backy refused to be parted from her, he had gnawed through the rope Lem tied him up with, she should be in no real danger from man or beast, especially now in midsummer when animals had plenty of forage. Wren looked at her dog, who was scratching his ear with his hind leg. If she asked him, he would lead her straight to Rooks. Yet the point of these lessons was for her to learn woodcraft herself, so relying on her talent would be cheating. Wren sighed, scratched some insect bites of her own, and bent again to study the ground for a broken twig or a spot that had been smoothed by a pine needle broom. Woodcraft remained the most challenging of her lessons. Not that she actually distinguished herself in swordplay or archery, but when she and Lem practiced those skills, Rook stood right there berating them in his cranky nasal voice. Learning to follow a trail or survive on one's own in the wilderness involved a degree of solitude and self-sufficiency that came hard for a former royal born into pampering. Even now, she almost never had to fend for herself, although Persia had relocated to Gulltown to dance full-time now that she had become a lead dancer. Stalia, so strong and capable, came to Wren's aid if she had trouble working the mangle or gutting a fish. Rooks was forever harping on her that she needed to sharpen her senses. "Feel the sun, you lack wit," he would chide her. "Any idiot can tell the difference between maple and elm leaves underfoot. Pine smells completely different from cedar." She surveyed the half-glen where she had paused, but the thick spruce trees filtered the light, making it hard to see clearly, especially in the humid air. She heard insects whining as they tried to feast on her, and a woodpecker pounding away. Jays kept pestering her for her attention, and she had to block them out of her mind. It had rained hard some nights ago, leaving the ground a little spongy, which might help her, as the damp ground would hold marks. Eventually, Wren spotted the subtle impressions of the needle broom, a clue that allowed her to move confidently for about 20 paces before she had to search again. Wren looked closely at the log and noticed a compressed chunk of bark. 1 pace onward, she spotted a smidgen of her own footprint, so she struck out on the faintest trace of a trail, confident about her direction again. Since Rooks had not allowed her to pack water or food, Wren had gradually been growing thirsty. She stood still, listening with all her might, and in the distance she detected the splash of a stream. She angled in the water's direction, climbing over obstacles for about 30 minutes until she struck its bank. She lay down to cup water to her mouth, savouring it as Backy lapped beside her. Wren considered the stream carefully. This had to be the stream Rooks had used on the way into the depths of Anders Wood, in which case she didn't need to literally retrace Rooks's twisted path, but rather just follow the water. The stream would find the easiest and most direct route and save her from getting lost. She set off with renewed speed. When it got so dark she smashed her toes on roots and rocks, Wren chose a level stretch of bank, neither damp nor rocky, to halt for 2 hours of rest, smearing mud on her skin as protection from the biters, waiting for the moons to rise high enough so she could continue. Backy circled around, tramping down some ferns to make a soft bed, as she leaned against a black oak trunk and watched the water swirl by, white crests glowing faintly. Lulled by the hum of the cicadas and the periodic hoot of owls, her thoughts roamed randomly. It disturbed her how Winton folk shunned Rooks and Lemley, as if the villagers needed to set certain people beyond its pale. She'd noticed how tightly neighbours clung to subtle status distinctions, even when they all faced poverty, hunger, and back-breaking labour. Heartwarming kindness might be extended to one of their own, but cruelty was directed toward anyone who threatened traditional ways. And when trouble bit too close to the bone, like when a lightning strike took one barn and not another, people eyed each other and dark rumours sprang up like mushrooms. Many turned to superstitions such as amulets and fortune-telling. Even Willem threw nutshells over his shoulder if he saw a buzzard. Despite town disapproval, Wren kept up her friendship with Rooks and Lemley, and no one openly chided her. But she knew that if these good people even suspected her talent, she herself might be in danger. Extraordinary abilities were heralded in legend and song, but having them manifest in your own valley would be highly unsettling. She could just imagine the gossip. If Wren could talk to animals, perchance she was responsible for the coyotes that carried off four of Winton's prize geese. Her mind turned to her talent, and she realised that now, at full dark, forest creatures called to her. While most mammals and birds recognised her, not all were cooperative. She constantly needed to reevaluate her abilities with different species and individual animals. She made Baccy keep still and silent while she communed with the deer.
Come on. Come here. I won't hurt you. I'd like to stroke your fur. That feels so nice,
sent the fawn when Wren scratched it behind the ears.
A little like when Mother licks one, only different.
She bent her head lower and took two hesitant steps closer.
Your coat is very soft, replied Wren.
She is a perfect fawn, said the doe proudly. See her pretty markings, and she follows attentively.
Baccy lifted his head and growled a warning. The startled doe and fawn skittered off, their white tails receding in the gloom. Wren peered through the darkness. The nearly full moons had risen and hung in the tree branches.
What do you smell?
She asked the dog.
Don't know.
He wrinkled his nose again.
Something strange.
Baccy, look. See the tiny little red sparkles. Two sets of two, there in that maple. And they fly.
Bats,
he answered.
Oh, they smell.
Wren had lived with bats all her life, but never before seen eyes like these. She tried to speak to them, but their minds remained shut to her. The only impression she received back hinted at fierce determination, as if their will had been bent to one task, which was unnerving. Mother Moon and Daughter Moon had risen high enough to throw pale light on her route, so she resumed her trek. The red-eyed bats followed her, flapping from one branch to the next. Then they began to flutter in circles around and around. The bank was uneven, sometimes rocky, sometimes littered with downed trunks. For speed, Wren stepped into the stream itself. At first, she tried to stay in the shallow edge, but soon enough she slipped and slid into the middle of its flow, where she encountered the fewest obstacles. She splashed up to mid-thigh, heedless about getting wet, eager to get away from these strange pursuers. Baccy caught her fear and jumped upward, snapping his jaws, but the two bats soared above his reach.
Speckles! Speckles, where are you? I need you!
Wren feared her call for assistance would be futile. Owls stick close to their home nests. She had no idea how far her talent would reach these days. When she looked up from her slick footing, the bats pursuing had grown in number to 6 or more. Because they flew in swirls and swoops, Wren couldn't really keep count. Their eyes glowed, their wings rustled, and she heard strange chirps. Her pulse started pounding. A bat made a dive at her head. She uttered a little screech and waved her hands around herself frantically as she splashed faster. Her wild movement seemed to scare it off for a moment, but she slipped and fell heavily in the water. When she rose, dripping, she grabbed a floating stick as a weapon. 2 bats circled closer and closer, even though she swung at them with the stick. The creatures didn't appear put off by the stick itself, but her erratic movements also shook many drops of water into the air. Becky barked, but he was helpless to protect her from a threat coming from overhead.
Help! Help me!
Wren called to the woodland around her in general. She left the stream only when the slight rise on the right-hand bank looked familiar. Leaves that had not decomposed crunched under her sodden boots. These must be the oaks where Rooks had brought her for her first lessons in woodcraft. When she came up over the rise, she could smell wood smoke from Rooks's supper fire, and in the sky she caught the pale glint of the high branches of the 2 tall white-barked sycamores behind his hut. She was close to safety now. On dry ground, she moved faster. When she was 100 paces from the cabin, all of a sudden, hands came out from behind a spruce. One clamped over her mouth and the other grabbed her around the neck. Terror overwhelmed Wren. But in the next half second, she realised that Becky had not growled and that the hands smelled like the scented soap Lemley favoured. She elbowed him forcefully in the belly and he let go.
Oh! Oh! Oh, you got me good. Did I scare you? I've been waiting for ages. Rooks made me do it, you know. He said you would drop your guard when you thought you were safe home.
You scared me out of my boots, Lem. Did I hurt you?
Only a little. I held my breath as you came up the hill so you wouldn't hear me breathing. I thought the backy would give me away. I wonder why he didn't.
Let's hurry inside, Wren urged Lemley.
As they jogged up the hillside, one bat settled on her shoulder while another lit on her head. Wren jerked her body violently and threw up her hands to brush them off before they could bite her. Almost simultaneously, she heard the hoots and rustle of several woodland owls.
"One comes to thy summons, your majesty," said these new allies.
"Get these bats away from me!
One will hunt the creatures that trouble thee."
She risked a quick glance upward where she spied the owls chasing and the bats fleeing. Lem and she burst into the cabin, disturbing Rooks, who lay covered up in his bunk. Wren was aghast. He had been sleeping while she was out alone in the woods. A second glance revealed that her instructor was still fully dressed and booted, so his casualness was feigned. He wanted a report about her trek back. She told him everything about her decision to follow the stream home, except her fear of the strange bats. Had she been childish? Inside the familiar cabin with Lem, Rooks, Becky and a lantern, it was hard to fathom the fear they had raised in her. Rooks chortled about the trick he had played on her with Lem, and then grew serious.
"Too many scouts have died because they let down their guard when they imagined they were safe. When you're on patrol, you stay on patrol.
Balls, even when you're off patrol, you never let your guard down like that. My Lem huffs like a bear and smells like a posy. He should never have been able to get within 6 paces of you, let alone grab you. Do you get me?"
Wren swore she had learned her lesson. She did not tarry for any words of praise from Rooks about her speed in returning from the drop-off point. If he had not cursed her, he was pleased enough. Barley dozed in the glen behind the cabin. As she mounted up, she saw speckles soar in from the south, settling gently on a nearby sycamore.
"The bats! Did the other owls get them?"
One finished off the last straggler.
What are they? Why are they following me?
Smelling thee.
Why? Speckles had no answer, which alarmed Wren even more. Take me home, Barley, quickly.
Home, your majesty.
On watch, Becky?
One is thy shield.
Speckles?
One flies above.
Sighing out her relief, Wren could relax a little. Regardless of Rooks's warning, the animals had much sharper senses than she did. Famished and exhausted, she yearned for the cottage. She didn't know whether these forestry lessons would be of any use to a queen, but she could concoct no instruction in commanding subjects or choosing counsellors, and she needed to do something to prepare herself. Someday she would have to leave this remote hamlet and find a way of claiming the throne. When should she leave? How would she proceed? She had no plan and no one to advise her. Thinking about her isolation, Wren's thoughts moved on to her foster parents. Though they may have wondered why she spent so much time with Lemley in Anderswood, they knew courting was not an issue. If they asked, Wren had an answer ready. She would say she was searching for her birth mother's shack, though she expected this ruse would wound them. Knowing that her foster parents loved her while she used them, she always walked a tightrope between accepting their affection and pulling away. Often she would relax and find herself confiding some little worry to Stalia or enjoying Willem's gentle teasing. The next moment, she would remind herself that every minute of her life with them was a lie. And one day, she would be leaving them. A few days later, while gulping down his tisane, tucking some bread and cheese in his waist purse and pulling down his hat, Willem said,
"Syrup through a shoe last night right before I got home. Take him to Carney."
Willem rode off on Barley to meet up with Duke Naven's taxman and guards. The villagers would be less bitter about the tithing when they recognised a familiar face. Since it was market day, Wren checked whether her tetter needed anything else from town. Then she and Tillim led Syrup into Winton, with Baccy roaming before and behind them, startling a flock of wild turkeys. They found Carney busily repairing a farmer's cartwheel.
"Can you leave Syrup with me for a spell, Wren? I'll get to him as soon as I can."
Wren left the horse and stopped at the market stalls, where she filled her bag, and then proceeded to the apothecary, because they needed more coal tar for her hair tonic and more liniment for Stalia's aches. She paused outside the door.
"As soon as we're done in here, Tillim, I'm treating you to whatever you fancy from the sweetery," she said.
Then she walked in, hoping that old man was behind the counter today and not his youngest son, Volthane. Wren still tried not to attract attention, but at 16 summers she could not overdo her performance of shyness. She had rounded out and grown to her full height, which she guessed was a tad taller than her mother had been. She didn't think of herself as comely, certainly not as pretty as Persia, but she must be at least moderately appealing, because a few of the local lads signalled interest. Corbury she put off with frost, but she found it harder to be rude to Volthane. He had an eager way about him, a soft curl in the middle of his forehead, and he asked with genuine friendliness,
"And what can we get for our Wren this day?"
Our Wren. Wren sometimes felt as if she actually belonged here, though she found her endless round of chores arduous and boring. Her life in Winton felt precious, perhaps because she knew she was only biding her time, waiting for some unknown signal, listening for an inaudible call. She told him what she needed. As Volthane poured out the mixtures, he said,
"Say, Wren, I heard that there's going to be a new fiddler at the Solstice Fest dance, and I was wondering..."
"I'm sorry," she said, tucking the bottles in her basket and trying to mitigate her rudeness with a half smile. "I promised Tillim a treat, and he's been so patient. We really must dash." Tilim, with the pokiness of a four summers boy, took forever to decide what he wanted from the sweetery. Then he ate his fudge ever so slowly. Afterward, they stopped at the Church of the Waters. Since no one was about, Wren cupped her hands under the small fountain's trickle and drank. Then she offered a gulp of water to Tilim. They headed back to the blacksmith's yard to find Carney refitting the repaired wheel rim on a cart, while his apprentice, Alat, chewed syrup. Alat concentrated on the task and did not look up. He pounded in the last nail and straightened. "My thanks," Wren said, as casually as she could manage.
"William can settle up with me when he's next in town," Carney called over.
"Right, I'll tell him."
Wren led Syrup to the mounting block, tied her market bag on, helped Tilim into the saddle, and climbed up herself. As she clucked to the horse, without warning, Alat grabbed Syrup's cheek strap.
"Don't think I've forgotten, you Donegal bitch. One day I'll find a way to get back at you."
Without a command from Wren, Syrup yanked his head out of Alat's grasp and picked up his pace.
"Rox is right. I mustn't let down my guard. Even here in Winton, I am surrounded by those who wish me harm."